God, if I had to move and sell right now, wow.
Really,
no.
really selling it here.
How Jen. Daunting.
You can't list for whatever you want.
Contrary to popular belief.
Ultimately, the market is going to figure out what a home is worth.
What amount of work do you need to do to your house before selling it?
What is your ideal time to actually move out of your house?
I don't care how cold it is outside. I do not wear hoodies to listing pictures.
There are times, guys, when life's more important than a rate. It goes back to what Uncle Dave says.
And what does Uncle Dave Ramsey say?
Don't keep up with the Joneses. Joneses are broke.
Welcome back to Millennia, the no BS real estate solutions for millennials, entertaining you while facing real life issues and giving you the tools, resources, and know-how to keep you moving up towards your housing goals. We're your hosts, Jen Inesky and Seth Lejeune, coming out of the greater Philadelphia area, and we are Millennia.
Welcome back to another episode, powered by Wawa.
Powered by Wawa, again. We're not going to lose your number, Wawa. We're coming for you.
Yeah.
We would love to have some kind of cross-promotional collaboration. My family basically subsists on Wawa on the weekends. We love it.
I'm on first-name basis with my Wawa crew.
Yeah, I'm not.
I know where headquarters is.
HQ.
Route 1, baby.
Wawa, PA.
On Route 1. It's such on a Route 1. I want to know where the beginning of Wawa, PA is and where the end of Wawa, PA is.
I think Wawa...
So...
I think in the end, I think the good people of Wawa would be able to answer that for us.
Oh, you can tell us when you let us know that we're going to be partnering. That's so awesome. So last week, talked about the top three things that we want every buyer to know. And now we're going to talk about the top three things that we want every seller to know.
Yep. So why don't you kick us off?
To no surprise, number one is the exact same one as for buyers, because we cannot emphasize this enough. And it is, there's no such thing as too soon. For doing your homework, for reaching out, for getting prepared, for getting your systems in place, for getting your house ready. There's no such thing as too soon.
So who do you think should start earlier, buyers or sellers?
It's the same.
No, it's not. Wait, don't give me that look.
Okay, so for the sake...
Huh.
Who what? Should start earlier to be able who, to get the answers that they
buying,
need?
If you're buying or selling, who should start earlier, buyers or sellers? You're smart. You should, I mean, obviously.
There's pros and cons to both, because like for buyers, you have to bake into, okay, so say both of them have a, I know where you're going with this.
There you go.
Sellers, you go. Because they have to buy too.
About 37 seconds. There we go.
I'm on a new medication.
She's on a new medication.
Okay, sellers.
So why don't you take a stab at what I'm thinking? Why don't you try to jump inside my head here?
Because sellers are buyers. So they also need to buy. And well, because I was going to say buyers, because like if everybody has the same like moving day that they need to move, you have to, as a buyer, you have to bake in time to get offers like rejected and for things to take a bit longer, make sure that your finances are in order to be able to send in everything that you need to. But so do sellers, but they also have to sell a house.
So in a non-word salad-y answer,
if you want word
sellers,
salad, come to me.
Sellers have more to do. They have to buy.
Drop a comment below if I didn't just say that.
Yeah, but sellers just have more to do. There's more for them to do. They have to worry about buying. Yeah. But they also have to get a house ready for sale.
If you own a house, even if you don't and you just live in a house somewhere where you have at least like some space to keep things, can you imagine packing up and going through every single item that you have to clear out your entire house, but also make sure that it is absolutely spotless to make it look like a model home? Because I know for me, I've thought about that multiple times. Not that I'm like looking to move or that I'm in any kind of position to move right now, but like I have thought, God, if I had to move and sell right now, wow.
Really,
no.
really selling it here.
How
Jen.
Daunting. It's true. I look at the baseboards that need to get like scrubbed and like the nail holes that need to get filled. And I look at all the little things, but that's me as a real estate agent and knowing, God, it's such a blessing and a curse. Because then I look at my house and I'm like, if I were to move, I would have to fix this trim. I would have to finally actually address that thing over there. I'd have to fix this faucet. There's so many just like little things. And I'm like, oh my God. But the sooner you get started and the sooner you talk to somebody, and this has always been the thing I try to drive home to people, is like, if you're thinking of moving in like December, talk to us in January. If you're somebody who is like analysis paralysis by the end of things and like you wait until even September, October thinking you're getting ahead of it, don't do it to yourself and get yourself so overwhelmed with it's going to be a lot that you have to do. But if you have enough time to be able to spread it all out and be able to chuck away at it a little bit at a time, then it's going to be so much more manageable. Well, so that by the time you have to buy, your house is already ready and you're like, all right.
Well, time can do that. But I would also argue that you don't need an entire year. If you have agents who are, organized and have lists for you. We have a seller questionnaire that,
love that
really unpacks like the mindset and like all of the things to think about before you actually put a sign in the lawn. We have checklists for preparing your house for sale, painting carpet, getting things ready, doing the cleaning and the fixing up and the handyman.
Well, and sometimes you also don't know what you need to do. Like, is it a lot of work or is it not? It's better to get the answers of what it is that you need to do. Do you just need to, we have this on our questionnaire, is what amount of work do you need to do to your house before selling it? Yeah. Is it like just a spackle paint or do you need to do like major repairs? And those are things, if you don't know, get one of us in ahead of time to ask.
I will go even more basic than that. What is your ideal time to actually move out of your house?
Yeah.
A lot of people are activated by having a deadline. So it's like, well, listen, by May 1st, we are getting this house on the market and we want this thing gone by 4th of July. Like, we know that we don't want to have the keys to this house anymore. We want to be in our new house by July because we want to settle in for a year or for a month or two. Like, a good realtor is going to talk you through.
Don't want to carry two
that,
mortgages.
Like, emotional and logistical kind of journey. Like, why is that date important? Well, have you thought about this? Being able to get way out ahead of the process. And how do we eat the elephant?
One bite at a time.
One bite at a time.
If there's anything we are most repetitive in this podcast about, it's probably Seth saying, how do you eat an elephant?
Well, because it's just like what you said. Obviously, very passionate about the home selling and home buying process. You've seen multiple people go through the process.
Mm-hmm. You're very enthusiastic about eating elephants.
And I'm very, very, I'm not passionate about eating elephant. I'm very passionate about how you eat an elephant.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
But it's like, not to beat a dead horse or a dead elephant, but
beat me to it.
But get, what's that?
You beat me to it.
Yeah, I figured. But no, being able to get way out ahead of it, it is totally a digestible process, but you have to be organized. Like we always say, you're not buying a stock. This is a slow moving thing that is never going to be over a weekend. You might be able to sell the house over a weekend, but the amount of things you need to do before that pales in comparison, or the actual weekend of selling it pales in comparison to all the things that you need to do.
Now, don't get me wrong, and I've said this before in another episode, is it's been done. People that had just moved out of state, they were going to take some more time to get ready to list their house, but they saw this one property out of state and they said, we really, really like this, but put it this way, if we get this, then we will sell our house right now. But if it's not this one, then we're still going to sell our house, but just we'll take a little bit more time with it because it was right around like Christmas and whatever. They got the house. And so then it was literally like we had a home sale contingency deadlines to meet. And it was like, boom, 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 boom. Like, I cannot believe how much they packed that house up and got that place ready in
But I was getting the play-by-play, and they were exhausted, anxious, completely overwhelmed. They didn't actually get it all done. They left things. Are we talking about some people.
I helped with moving some things.
Yeah, no, and you helped with a lot of things. That house was not ready.
We're not talking about them.
Oh.
Not the ones from last year.
Oh, got it.
The ones that I just did.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about that one. Love you guys dearly if you know who I'm talking about.
I was painting the house. That house was
not being complete. Not that one. The other one that I just recently sold.
Okay. Well, I believe.
No, most I had to do was like help move a couple things out of the way. It was more than that.
And I've done that. I've borrowed a truck and gotten stuff out of the way and gotten stuff to consignment shops. And
when I show up for listing pictures, I don't know why I hadn't learned my lesson by now to not wear. I don't care how cold it is outside. I do not wear hoodies to listing pictures. I am moving around. I'm picking stuff up. Yeah. I'm hauling stuff around. I am sweating at listing photos. Sure. I let Jody tell me, the photographer tell me, like, that's got to go there. No problem, Jody. And I am moving stuff. Tell me where to be. You are now in charge. I am just a lackey.
Yep.
And I'm sweating. And I'm wearing sneakers and I'm hustling. Give yourself the time if you can.
Yeah. What is the second?
These new meds are doing wonders for me, I swear.
You can't list for whatever you want.
Contrary to popular belief.
And I know where this comes from. It comes from people bragging about how much money they got for their house. Yes.
Can you list it for what Zillow says it is?
Sometimes.
Elaborate.
Sometimes a house is completely ridiculously off when it comes to this estimate. Sometimes it's about right.
But always have your agent double check.
That's part of it. So like, we love and hate Zillow in real estate. Zillow has been a great way, kind of like HGTV. It's created a really interesting view into inside housing and into the industry, and it is readily accessible data. I mean, back in the day, you had to have the MLS book You'd have to call a licensed real estate agent and a brokerage to get the book. And you'd have to go into the office to see what was actually on the market. Of course, you could drive around, see the signs, but it wasn't very efficient.
It's wild.
Zillow has made it more accessible, and they have created this Zestimate, and it's not always accurate. And it does lead sellers to a false sense of security on the upside and on the downside. Sometimes it undervalues, like my house is not valued properly because it doesn't know that I put a 1,000-square-foot addition and I have all new everything, and it's still basing it on a 2019 sale.
I will say, though, it's not as much as we like have a love-hate relationship with it. It is the first thing that, at least in my approach to pricing a house, first thing I go to because it's the first place that the buyer is going to go to look and see what it would be worth.
Yeah, it's very rare that we have a client who has not looked at their Zestimate before they call an agent.
Yeah.
So I always tell the team, I'm like, you need to look at that because if that's where their expectation is, you might have some more work to do.
Now, my favorite part is though when, because it's all based off of just an algorithm of the data that it's provided without actually being a human being and knowing what's inside of it and what you've done to it. And also what specific, even like the kind of street that it's on makes a difference in value sometimes. But my favorite with this fun little algorithm that it has that I'd love to know the very deep intricacies of is when it says that its value is one thing before you go to list it. And then you list it, and then all of a sudden it says that, oh, but this estimate is, and it throws it like $5,000 under what you listed it as. And it's nothing close to what it had said originally. Yeah. It's like, why did Zillow all of a sudden change what the value is? I'm like, because it's all just an algorithm. It's all just a game to be able to get the clicks.
Well, I think it is, but it also, they don't want the Zestimate in the crosshairs. They don't want, so let's say you list a house for $750 or for $350 and the Zestimate says $310. And then you got buyers who are like, well, wait, that the Zestimate says it's worth $310. And why is it listed for $350? And so I think Zillow is making a calculated decision that they don't want their Zestimate to be part of these conversations in a disparaging way, or people arguing over whether it's accurate or not. Hmm. I think that creates a lot of attention that they don't necessarily want. So it's easy for this algorithm to just, oh, yeah, it's worth that now because that's what somebody wants to list it for. And in this market, the expectation is that it's going to sell for what it's listed for, because the expectation is that a realtor went in, looked at it, the actual physical value of that house actually is what the realtor said it's worth.
Well, there's also that one with that person that was on our team who had that very unique one, and the Zestimate was like,
forget about this Zestimate with a unique property. And sometimes what I also say is that it's not just the unique. It could be a very ordinary house, but if it's very unique for the area. So I had one in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, and this house was on almost 2 acres, which if Fort Washington, it's very hard to get. And yeah, your expression right there is,
there is a plain 2 acres of land dedicated to one property in Fort Washington.
But it's a very ordinary house that you can find everywhere, but it is tucked next to a highway. And it is a
busy highway.
Busy highway. And it's a flag lot, meaning it's got a very long driveway entrance. And the house was a complete time capsule. So the person who owned it lived to be 100. And from like age 80 to 100, she wasn't updating the house. So the house was like,
that's the last thing I'd want to do from 80 to 100 too.
Yeah. I mean, she was sitting at the house all day. She didn't want contractors coming.
I'm trying to keep myself young and fresh, not my house.
Yeah. So in the end, this estimate was way off because what it was doing, it was taking a calculation of a 3,000 square foot house in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. And then it was adding in the acreage. But it didn't take into account the acreage was right next to a highway and that the house had not been updated at all. And so
how long did that take to sell?
It never did sell. The family bought it.
Oh.
One of the brothers bought it. So that was one of the only houses in the past 3 years that I was not able to sell. So
I know the other one of that was a really, 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 really tough one too.
Yeah. And the other one that I couldn't sell was like 7,500 square feet and like a converted
over $1 million in a not $1 million area,
not $1 million area on a huge lot with but it was basically like two houses in one. And it was a very,
it was really cool.
It was really cool, but he only wanted to spend 3 months trying to sell it. And that's a house you got to sit for a year.
Tough area.
Tough areas. Bad. But no, but like the more unique the house is, listen, if you want a Zestimate on your condo,
It's probably pretty close. Actually, for the first time, Zestimate and I hard agreed. The one that I had ran by you. And now given, the Zestimate had a $100,000 estimated range, which I'm like, now that is not his estimate when it's like as low as this, as high as this, it's $100,000.
That's a cover your ass.
And they just met somewhere in the middle. Yeah. But after I ran like actual comps on it and actually ran the value on it, Zillow and I actually agreed.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. I would probably actually list it for slightly more than what it was, but it was actually pretty.
Is this the one in Westchester?
Yes.
Yeah. But going back to the original thing is that listing your house for whatever you want is not reality. You have to still price it where the market will pick it up. You can get away with more right now because it's very competitive. People are willing to overpay just to get the house. But yeah, you start listing it 10, 15, 20% over what it's worth, nobody's going to look at it and things will sit.
Well, there's a strategy to it too. So there's market value and then there's listing it above market value and then high above market value. And then there's listing it slightly below market value.
Yeah.
And I always get the raised eyebrows anytime I tell a seller, like, you want to price it slightly below market value, it gains more attention.
Yeah.
And the more we talked about this in our like dating comparison, the closer you get to actually pricing it to value. And if it's like slightly below, the more interest that you're going to get. And you would like to get a lot of interest on it, but not too, I'm not saying too low, just set in a price, attractive price point. If it's worth maybe $530, but you decide to price it at $525, that's going to open up an entirely new amount of people.
Yeah, but it's ultimately comes down to two things. What's more important, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, time or money?
Right.
Do you need to get a certain amount? Because if you need to get a certain amount, we can put this thing on the market and it can sit for 30 days, 60 days. If you want to just get done with it and see where the market takes it, and it's more important that you fulfill the timeline that's in your head, we list it at or just below list price, let the people come in, someone's going to buy it, and let the chips fall where they may.
A whole pricing strategy.
There is a pricing strategy, but ultimately the market is going to figure out what a home is worth.
I think it's important too. So if you do decide to like aggressively, like a little higher than what like maybe we'd recommend, but like you really, really want to, typically I will bake in a plan and a timeline for, okay, we're going to give it this amount of time at that price. If we don't have X amount of showings or there is like no activity for offers even to come in, and if the feedback that we are getting is all saying the same thing, it's about price by this date, then we are going to have a conversation about dropping it.
I always say we're going to have our feedback in 7 days. We're either going to be under contract or we're not. That's it. You know, there's only so much a realtor can do to sell a house.
And that also goes into knowing the market of the area that you're in, because some are more fast moving.
Yeah, and listen, if you have a really unique property and it's priced absolutely right, it can still sit. But 95% of the homes that are being sold in this country are normal houses or condos or stuff that is pretty desirable.
Yeah, because I had a client that had gone, we were in a pretty desired area. It had still been sitting for a week and she goes, should we drop the price? I said, not yet. I said, nothing that we have heard back is about price. Not one of them. They've actually all said it's priced correctly. I said, and I strongly believe it's priced correctly. I really think that we just need to wait for the right person to come in and fall in love with it. Because there was one kind of like big obstacle. It was one where like the bathroom. Yeah. Otherwise, like the house was really great, but it had a quirk with where the bathroom was placed. And I was like, I really just think the right person needs to come in. The right person came in and we got it sold.
Yep. What's the third one?
What was the third one?
I don't remember.
I'm getting so hyped up. My brain's in scattered mode. What was the third one?
What do you think it was? You don't remember?
I forget.
You forget?
I don't even think I wrote it down.
You don't even think you wrote it?
We were going on fly. I wrote the other two.
It comes down to...
Oh, was it the interest rate?
Yeah. It comes down to...
See, I remembered.
There is a, obviously we just have recently gone through a very, very low interest rate environment. And I think some people get too fixated on this interest rate payment. And I know sometimes the math can be scary if you're going to sell your house and you're going to give up a 3% rate for a 6.5% rate. But there are times, guys, when like life's more important than a rate. I am seeing more people. I am probably working with 4 or 5 divorcing couples now. That I'm not saying that because they stayed in their house, that's the reason you're getting divorced, but life is too short. And there's times when I think that people are staying and enduring too much pain with their house just for the sake of a payment. Again, I don't want to minimize like, okay, going from a $2,400 a month payment to a $4,400 a month payment, that's real money. And that creates its own other host of issues because
some people just
financial distress. And some people just can't.
I know people who are in a position where with what they even with selling their house, with what they can afford to, they need to upsize, but financially they're in a place to only make a lateral move. It's not going to solve any problems.
It's not going to solve any problems, but I do believe there is a small segment of people. They're pretty sure they can afford more. And I'm not really talking to the women. I'm talking to the men. The men are really the ones who are like, I got this low rate, and they feel like they've won. They feel like they've taken care of their family. They feel like they've beaten the system. We live in a country of just bereaved. I think of like bereavement, and a lot of people feel that they've gotten screwed. And I think by extension, this 3% rate is like a representative of like them thinking that they've won or beaten the system or stuck it to Wall Street or the government or whatever. But there are downsides to holding onto a house for too long, especially if you've got a growing family or if you're just driving, like your commute is forever because since you bought that house, your job has moved. And
what about the people who are saying that, okay, well, I don't want to, but I still, fine, I will move because happy wife, happy life.
Like, no, that's definitely a thing.
But what if they say, then I don't want to give up this rate, but I want to make my family happy, so we'll move, but we're not going to sell this house and we're going to keep it as a rental.
Well, like
so that we can keep this rate.
You could do that, but then it turns into investment property. And we're going to talk about that in an upcoming episode, why that cannot be.
It'll be the next episode, actually.
Is it the next episode?
Tune in next week because we're going to talk about investments.
Yeah, we're going to talk about investments. That's a big one. People have been asking us for that
for
a while, so I'm going to dust off my investor hat. This third suggestion is not for everybody. Not minimizing that people need stability and just don't go sell your house just to buy another one because you
but don't corner yourself in to thinking that you have to.
But don't put yourself in the mindset. It's like, I'm here for life. This is it. That doesn't work either. There is going to be an opportunity down the road as interest rates come down to potentially vacate that house and buy something new. And just don't like mentally, and I'm really talking to the men here, do not get mentally locked into the fact that it's, okay, I got my 2.75% rate. My financial planner is telling me it makes no sense to move. There's just no reason that I'll ever move again because quietly in the background, your logistics don't work. Your family's not super happy. You really could use some extra space. Maybe your wife's isn't proud to have people over. That's a big one, man. People want to be able to entertain and they want to be able to be proud when their in-laws come into the house and that they've taken care of their grandkids and like that kind of thing. So that's the third one. I'm sure it's going to be controversial. I'm sure the financial planners of the world and the real estate gurus will say, oh, yeah, it's nuts for people to suggest moving out of a 2.7% rate. But there is a demographic out there of people who can afford to move. They can afford to move and then refinance when it comes down to it.
I've come to the point where a pain outweighs the payment.
That's right. And that's if they're in enough pain, just be cognizant of that. And parents, like if you're spinning your wheels, you're not happy. Not that a new house is going to make you happy. But like a lot of times, like where you're going every day and sleeping and eating and raising your kids, sometimes that can be a major pain point. And that's what you and I talk about all the time, especially with like upsizers, where like an upsizer moves because there's a certain amount of pain that makes them say, okay, this house is no longer working for me. I need to move up. Right now, the interest rate is now an added factor and added component into all that conversation. And that's what we're very good about talking people through. Our lenders are really good at talking people through it, too. So that's my word salad-y, a Nusky-esque.
Now who's doing the word salad?
Now who's got the word salad? But I felt like it's something that...
Well, and get all the facts, too, before pigeonholing yourself into that idea of not wanting to give up your 3% interest rate or lower.
Yeah.
Because some people don't have the information to know that. Say you are like cash heavy. So you have like extra money to be able to, if you're going to be going to buy and you're like, yeah, but I don't want to. Maybe you talk to a lender about buying down your rate if that's something that's important.
Here's another take. Maybe if you live in that like 3,500 square foot house, you don't need it. Everyone thinks of downsizers as 65 years old and older. You've raised your kids and now you've got too much space, so you downsize. What if you bought the 3,500 square foot house where it's worth 800 grand and you realize we don't need all this house?
What a power move.
But it's a smart move. Maybe you could do an even swap where your 3% or 2.75% rate on that house is the same as a 6% rate on a smaller house. And yes, I think there's a lot of pride that comes into it, especially for men. Men are like very, very susceptible to this. But what if you did a downsize at 45?
Or what if you're like going to a different location where you can get more money, your money goes further.
So imagine you live in a shitty school district, but you own this big house versus living in a smaller house, but you live in a better school district. Is that a fair swap?
Depends on who you're talking to.
In theory, it would be, right? If you can make your payment close, like it may not be a completely, but you're going to save money because you have a smaller house repairs will be less. Your taxes are going to be less. There's something to be said about, instead of this normal post-World War II progression where it's, I buy the house, I upsize, I live, then I downsize when I'm in my 60s. Maybe the play, if you want to move into a different school district, is just to think, okay, so in 2020, we bought this huge house. It's been great. My experience is that the people who live in these big homes, it kind of wears off. A lot of time when they have to go replace the flooring. Like, you have to paint a 3,500 square foot house.
I was literally just going to say that.
Do you have any idea how much it costs to paint a 3,500 square foot house?
I'd want
to
throw up.
It's like it's thousands and thousands and thousands.
That's insane.
It's not $5,000.
Because then you say, oh my God, I'll just do it myself for that. But let's be real. No, I won't.
No. And it's, and you can't.
And like, you can't bribe your friends with pizza and beer anymore.
But you can't.
We have back
personally
problems.
Paint that house. That house, the buyer for that house is expecting a certain level of quality. And you do a DIY paint job.
You don't want me painting your house.
3,500 square foot house, $800,000. Like, that thing's, it's got to look nice. And I'm telling you right now, I'm assuming you would agree. You walk into that house, it's DIY. And as soon as you look down at the trim, as soon as you look down at certain things, it's obvious. Just something to keep in mind for sellers is maybe the play is not to do what everyone's been doing for the last 60 years. Maybe it is to be more strategic. And guess what? If the market does take a shit, in 4 or 5 years, your house at that point will be marketable much more than that big McMansion that you bought for $800,000.
Yeah.
It's about positioning your family and functionality, but it's about building a fort around your house. And sometimes it can be about creating peace of mind and getting them to where they need to be. Because if the economy does falter or something happens, you're where you should be and you have a happy wife, happy life, you're in the right school district, that type of thing. That is the same thing as having a ton of money in the bank.
That's why with the questionnaire that we have too, it like helps you figure those things out. Something that you think that you might need that you're thinking about moving, say, because a lot of people just fall to this timeline that's just been forced upon us, and just the, you go to college, you meet your spouse, you get married, you buy a house, you have kids, then you move again and upsize, and then you retire, and then you downsize, and then you raise your grandchildren, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just what's been.
I can't wait till that last 20 seconds is a reel on Instagram.
But I mean, I hate.
That's
going to be one.
Swinging arm, enough.
But yeah, no, it's just this. I hate these, like, just assumed timelines that are just thrusted upon us.
Do you know why that is? Do you know why people do that?
If you take me off of my current mind track right now, I'm never going
to
get back to it.
Finish your thought and we'll come back.
There it went. Derailed.
Fake laugh. Oh, there it went.
Yep.
Annoyed laugh. You need some coffee?
Got some coffee. It.
Powered by Wawa.
Powered by him.
Well, no.
But anyway, all to say.
Do you know why people do they follow a certain progression timeline? Because
they're told to.
No, because so people say that our school system is meant to enforce to cultivate obedient workers, but it's really obedient consumers. Everything you're talking about is consumer activity.
Something about the word obedience I hate.
Oh my God, I use that with I was literally just saying to my kid today, I was like, what's the way to daddy's heart? He's like, to do whatever you say. Then Jane was like, obedience. Because I always just said, no.
I think it was because one time and.
It's a strong word.
At school.
It's a word of control.
So into a private school. Yeah. And I hate it. But somebody told my sister that she needs to be obedient. And she said, I'm not a fucking dog. I don't know. I think that's like always been in my opinion, she's right. But that's also me just saying, I don't think anybody needs to set a certain structure for my own life when things work to the direction of the individual and which direction you want to go.
Yeah.
And if that's a matter of or staying with your parents until it's time to buy or being able to make different lateral moves and do a different area and not necessarily upsizing or just like making a move to what is best for your situation, then freaking do it.
It goes back to what Uncle Dave says. Uncle Dave Ramsey.
What does Uncle Dave Ramsey say?
Don't keep up with the Joneses. Joneses are broke.
Mm.
Totally true. And that's not just about buying nice cars and houses. It's about doing the things that everyone else is doing. Checking boxes and not really stepping back and saying, is this thing serving me? Should I go get my college degree in German?
We're not taught to ask questions.
I know. Obedience.
Hate it.
Anuski, I know you hate it, but it's true. because it is the only way.
It's gotten me in trouble at my old jobs, but guess what? Made me better at them.
No, but it's the only way that our societies have figured out how to control, and I don't want to say control, but to actually organize us in such a way that creates prosperity and commerce and goods and services and that type of thing. We need obedient workers, so they go make money and then they feed an economy that keeps the hamster wheel going. And
yeah, well, the thing is now I think they're feeding the things that are not really benefiting much of anybody, but that's where I go into my tangent about colleges and how they're making obedient students and workers, but then you don't see the people in the trades where we actually need them, and it's just, it's not doing, I don't, this could be a whole nother topic.
I want to ask a question to the audience, and then we'll wrap this up, which is, do people feel stuck even though they've got a 3% rate? Do they feel logistically or psychologically stuck in their homes, or is everyone just putting their feet up and just super happy with the house they live in? Is the 3% rate enough to overcome all the other pain, the school district, the location, the
So are you saying, are you at a 3% or less and perfectly happy, or 3% less and miserable? Not miserable, but
not happy.
Not thrilled.
Not thrilled.
Good question.
I know.
I want to know that too.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm really curious because I feel like there's a lot of just people will, I think people will also lie to themselves just to make them feel better about having it, or like ignore problems. But guess what? You can only ignore it so long.
You do. She says people, it's men. You're doing it. I know it's happening and you're proud and you're happy with your interest rate.
And say, no, nothing's wrong. And we can live with that. No, we can live, with,
live that.
With that. If
honey?
You had a 6% rate, could you still live with it? The problem, not the rate.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I know.
I want to know the answer to that too. Good one.
All right. Let's wrap it up.
Cool. So that's that on that. Let us know the answer to that, because yes, that's a really good one. And next we're going to talk about investments.
That's right.
Yay.
See you guys.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Millennia. For more information or to connect with us directly, you can always get a hold of us on Instagram at Millennia Podcast LLN, or through each of our pages at Janusky Gets It Done or at Ask Seth Anything. Until next time, keep moving up. Later.